Berg, I love you. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Cephalos Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubcephalo.com. Achilla Rondo Music Conservatory, providing students young and old the opportunity to sharpen their talents in music, theater, and dance. Stop by the conservatory in Canonsburg or at achillarondopittsburgh.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, providing laughs nearly every night of the week, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud sponsor of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Tonight's guest, James Frederick, director of the James Gallery. Director, is that?
I'm the owner.
Owner, yeah. Very good, of James Gallery in the West End. We'll start off with a local headline, topic of discussion from one of Pittsburgh's many fine news publications. The headline, Pittsburgh will not bid for 2024 Olympics. Is this a surprise? Pittsburgh, as I'm sure you know, was one of 35 cities in February invited to make a pitch for the 2024 Olympics. Mayor's office said, no dice. What are your thoughts?
I was thinking it was the West End.
That they were going to have the Olympics in?
Yeah, we have a lot right next door, perfect for curling.
Well, this is the thing I thought to myself, is where are they going to put it? You know, I mean, there's not a flat surface in this town. You know, what amuses me is, you know, I have trouble wrapping my head around the concept. And the only way that I can see this happening would be if they sort of enveloped it into the landscape, like skied down Mount Washington and took the incline as their ski lift. I mean, I don't know how this would happen.
We have Sawmill Run in the back. I thought they could do a white water run right back in
Perfect.
The Sawmill
so
Run, you know.
So it was not impossible, is what I'm getting here. But there seem to have been two schools of thought on this. Either this would be a windfall holiday for everybody from tourism to restaurants to the lady selling chicken on a stick in the strip district. She'd be driving a Mercedes, or if she's not already, because I hear she's very popular. Or it would be like Pittsburgh would just be pillaged and looted and bankrupted by this thing. And nobody was in the middle on this. So where does James Frederick fall?
Well, we had trouble with the Senior Olympics, I think, were vying for Pittsburgh a few years ago. And I don't think it flew here for that either. So,
wow.
You know, I love our city, but I think that was a stretch.
Yeah. I kind of look at it, I mean, I don't know if you saw the news after this recent Kenny Chesney concert, where it was just garbage everywhere. And somebody online even made a funny parody using the Crying Indian video from the 80s, you know, against pollution. But I would be so afraid. I kind of look at it like if you were to have a party at your house and you invite maybe 50 friends, and then they invite 50 friends, and those friends invite people. Bottom line, you end up having way more folks than you expected, and a month later, you're still doing dishes.
I've been to that one.
Right, it wasn't my place.
Yeah, it was.
I'm talking about back in, 2003, you were there, yeah. A month later, you're still doing dishes, you're finding like a bra in your couch cushions, and just multiply that by like a million, and I think that's maybe what we would have had on our hands. Now, I'm not saying anything about the behavior of, you know, distinguished Olympian performers or their, you know, patrons, but I don't know. It would have been neat, but it would have been tough.
Impossible.
I mean, we can't get around this city with all the construction as it is, let alone if they put like a discus stadium, you know, in Squirrel Hill. I don't know. The tunnels are closed again. They're illusion through them. You know, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, there you go.
How do you think it would have affected the fine arts market in the city. Any effect?
Jeez, never thought about it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I'm asking.
Well, any opportunity we have to bring people to the city and to show what we have here is a great opportunity, but it probably has to be in the scale that we can manage.
Well, Art Olympics. I wonder if that's ever been thought of.
There you go.
I don't know. But you've got a great location here, maybe not for skiing or lugeing, but certainly for showcasing many works of art. Tell me a little bit about the history of your gallery, which really very impressive. I think probably one of the most prestigious in the city. How did James Gallery begin?
38 years ago. I was 22. I opened what was at that time known as James Frames. Started as a framer. Actually, I've been framing pictures since I was 14.
Great.
I liked it. The business has just kind of over time evolved. 38 years gives you a lot of time to evolve.
It does. It does. Cheers to that.
Yeah, there you go. I'll drink to that.
Yeah, here's you, Mr. Frederick. Very good. So James Gallery, of course, named for you, James. Now it gets a little confusing because you have James Center right here, but you are the James behind James Gallery.
That was St. James, which is no relation to me.
And you haven't achieved sainthood yet as far as we know.
Long way off.
Another 38 years, right? good. What was the start here in the West End?
The start was actually in Dormont.
Okay.
We were in Dormont for 28 years. Developed the business from myself as just a one-man operator for 5 or 6 years and grew little by little. 8 years in, opened James Gallery on the corner of Potomac and West Liberty. Mm-hmm. Stayed another 20 years in that location, and 10 years ago found what we thought was a really great opportunity here in the city in the West End.
West End.
Fabulous property that we were the only, Gail and I, my partner, were the only two that saw what we envisioned what we created, and no one else believed that. They all thought we were crazy. We loved being here. We were kind of the catalyst, I think, to bring in a few new businesses, actually took a chance in the West End like we did. And now we have a little bit of a design community down here. There's a number of good businesses that have joined in and have made this their home.
Yeah. Well, I think to stay in the business 38 years, first of all, is very impressive. But
or
you know,
crazy.
So perhaps, but you're still here. That's what's insane. That's as right. You may be, you're still here. But what do you feel? And by all means, my show, feel free to toot your own horn here. What do you feel really has been the key to that success, to really survival in, let's face it, a very tough market right now? So what do you feel really kind of sets you apart from the rest and has kept you going strong for 38 years, or kept you going for 38 years?
A little bit of stubbornness, I think. You know, I kept our focus to develop something that would have longevity. So we moved, actually, we found our niche. You know, one thing in the arts, I think, you know, creative people might have a tendency not to run a business like a business might need to be run to be there.
You know, I've always thought that, you know, and that's sort of the unfair thing about how artists are built. You know, they're thinking with that creative half of their brain all the time, and I think it's tough being so immersed in what they're creating to consider the business side of it as well. Now, some can do it. There are a lot of artists out there that are very savvy business people.
Those are your successful ones.
Oh, yeah.
The ones that have the staying power.
The others need folks like you, maybe.
Exactly, and that's part of the reason we're here.
Good.
Artists need what we have to offer.
So a big part of what you do then is artist management.
Yes.
And art placement, the things that they create, placing them with the right
people. I think one of the other things that we did well was we learned to look to larger projects. Mm-hmm. So here in Pittsburgh, we were fortunate enough to work on Children's Hospital and work on Consol Energy Center and PNC Park. And we do work in the healthcare industry. So our business took the side of business and the art of business in business. which we found our niche.
Right. So those are massive, massive projects.
They are.
How do you even begin to approach something like that? For example, you look at Children's Hospital and you look at Console Energy Center. I don't know if you might have the same piece of artwork hanging in each place. You know, it seems like a completely different vision. So where do you even start with something like that? Because if you were, as you were approached to do the, what would I say, decor, interior design?
Not so much the design. I think we were brought on to capture a spirit, for instance, in Console Energy Center. We were asked to find a way to portray through the artwork the energy in the sport. So when you, we discovered early on that hockey is a game of athletes sometimes that don't look like they're at all in motion. They're in a glide on a skate. So they're not really moving, but they're moving fast. So we had to portray that in the art. We blurred the backgrounds. We did things, tricks to photography that would project that kind of motion and that energy.
So for Console, your task was to supply the artwork that would enhance
We worked with a committee. We presented ideas. We selected the artists. Mm. We managed those artists to produce the images that we had in our mind, in our committee's eye. They produced what we were looking for.
And it certainly was not limited, I would presume, to things that would hang on the wall.
No. I mean, we were fortunate enough, actually, to be part of the Mario statue in front of the arena.
To all of our listeners out there, when you see Mario at the Console, you've got Mr. Frederick to thank for.
Yeah, exactly.
So just come by James Gallery. You got any more of those statues in the back?
No.
Who was the artist of that?
The artist was Bruce Wolf, an artist out of California. Mm-hmm. We actually had a search for artists. We included five in the end, which we selected. There were two or three local artists that we had looked at as well.
Wow.
But Bruce kind of raised, he was the artist we felt was most capable of capturing that moment and really doing the best likeness of Mario that we could find.
Now for something like Children's Hospital, which completely different energy than Console, or maybe not, I don't know, but you know, was your approach with that project any different? How did you
Well, the same
get
kind
the ball
of problems exist. You have to determine who your audience is.
Mm-hmm.
So once we discovered all kinds of things about the audience when we were working on Children's Console Energy Center. One of the things that was said to me early was if I am a fan of the Steelers, my son is going to be a fan of the Penguins. So there was a new demographic. The younger audience seemed to prefer hockey in some way, have a lot of excitement about it. Likewise, in Children's, I would have thought the audience I was playing to would have only been a child.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really far from the truth. Our audience were children of all ages, including grandparents. So we had to play to people that were visiting. And our job was to distract from a moment of stress and a moment that people are looking for reasons to talk about other things other than their problems. I think that was our job, and it's been really a rewarding moment when we get a letter from somebody saying that you helped me so much in this moment of really big trouble. We explored the collection, so to speak.
So you really consider every aspect of it. And I think, you know, when you walk through these places, a lot of folks don't realize everything that really goes into that. So on that note, what's like the weirdest project you've been asked to work on?
Most bizarre. Talk about it. No. Weirdest project.
Or most challenging, if you want me to give you kind of an outlook.
I think most, when you do a corporate project or a project like Children's Hospital, that was a very challenging project. We had never worked on a project like that before. Years ago, for instance, we did work on PNC Park. And that was our first experience working in the sport venue arena. We worked with a famous architect, HOK, which is now Populous, and they do stadiums all over the world. Through that experience, that opened doors for us to do projects, and we did the ballpark for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Wow.
We worked in Washington, D.C. with the Washington Redskins.
And all from here?
All from here. So
That's impressive, because it's not as if, you know, a building going up in Pittsburgh was looking for somebody local to do it. I mean, this was states away. You got this bid.
The architect thought enough of our work here to involve us in a project there.
That's great.
We would love to work on another children's hospital elsewhere. We mm-hmm. have learned you wouldn't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel.
All right. Great. And this gallery really, I think, provides, I mean, it's multifaceted. Not only, you know, are you taking on huge projects like this, but for individuals as well. If somebody comes to you and is, say, redoing their home or, you know, is having an apartment developed, it's kind of, you know, if I understand correctly, the same process almost to develop the art scheme for that individual as you would for the organization. Well,
fortunately for us, Pittsburgh right now, there is an emerging urban loft residence.
That's big. All these old factories that they're redoing, it's fantastic.
Great space. And likewise, we have clients that are discriminating enough that want unique, beautiful work in their homes. And fortunately for us, if they've seen us out in some of these big venues where we have that opportunity to do something more monumental, I mean, I think at that point they know that they could ask us to do something special for them in their home.
Sure.
And that's been a nice turn for our business.
Yeah. Now, did you do Max and Irma's?
Used to, yeah. I don't do that much any longer. The company has changed hands a few times since. But we were hired to do the local flavor. So they would send us to Detroit, and we would have to find what was interesting about this particular little neighborhood in Detroit that would bring the locals in to show the history. It was really actually a history lesson every time I did a store. I learned about a different part of the country, a different city. We loved working here in Pittsburgh because, you know, we had a nice archive here, but I still have a huge library of stuff.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I walk into that restaurant. Now, all the stuff on the walls, is that what you were responsible for?
Well,
so that's not just from art, that's everything.
Well, like, you know, you find wacky stuff. Talk about wacky stuff. You know, you put a tail from an airplane on a wall, you find a cigar store.
Right, like a bent trombone or something.
Exactly.
So where do you find this stuff? Where do you go?
Well,
and furthermore, where do you find the time? I mean, I'd figure, I don't know, you got a flea market or something.
Well, you find it anywhere. But, you know, the thing about something like that is you have to have the passion to be looking all the time. You're immersed in that kind of, I very seldom go into antique stores anymore or flea markets, or because I don't have the need for that in my work. I kind of miss it. It's the double-edged sword. You know, I miss it and I don't. I spent a lot of time in dusty libraries, and you know, we were near Jad's Ford, Pennsylvania, and we found this bookstore or library, and they told us, "Oh, you got to go to the room that we haven't opened up for 6 years," and they opened up this store and there was dust everywhere. And we found great stuff, but I suffered for weeks after.
The dust.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you took a little something extra with you then. That's great.
I didn't get charged either.
So what's one of the most unique items you've come across then in not only, you know, going out and hunting for these special projects, but just, you know, dealing with artists? What was one of the most unique items that you've come across?
Oh, I found a beautiful, I think it was from a rice picker in Asia somewhere. It was this big brimmed hat that was woven, and it was at the flea market at the Meadows. And
wow.
It was hanging on the wall, and I love that. I love objects, so when I find things that are unique, my eye gravitates to them. I look for things that I haven't seen before. Sarcophagus masks.
Wow.
In our framing business, we've seen lots of unique items that people want to display.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we take items like that and find a way to keep them safe in cases. And
now, one of my earlier visits here to James Gallery, I seem to remember a particular business card that you were in possession of. Are we allowed to talk about this?
Sure.
Okay.
I still have it. That was from the Max and Irma days. I found someone actually walked in the gallery with a card of Andrew Carnegie, and his address was Skibo, and it was
Andrew Carnegie's business card.
It was not shaped in a typical, maybe it was just because it was older, but much more narrow and long, and that's one of those pieces that I just hold on to.
And now I think of business cards as something very modern, but that kind of, you know, kind of jarred me that, you know, they had them. So what was on it? They're just an address. Were there telephones? Did they have a number?
I haven't looked at it for a while, but I know there was an address, and I think there was a phone number. But
wow.
I don't know that for sure.
Andrew Carnegie's business card. And if I remember, just kind of a white square, you know, kind of pictured me like embossed and dazzled and things, you know, with the Carnegie money. But yeah, very simple. But that was neat. That was really neat. Now, was there any way to authenticate that? Or?
Oh, I'm sure. And that's always been a question in my mind. That's why I just kind of hold on to it. But I'm sure that someone could tell me.
Do you get into appraisals in your business?
I've kind of stayed clear of that part of the business.
Yeah.
I have friends that I would, if I really need to know, there are people that I ask to help.
You know, I think it's tough. You know, I mean, how do you put a value on some things? You know, I mean, most of the time I think, well, it's worth what somebody's going to pay for it. So I think that's got to be a challenge, you know, even when dealing with modern art. You know, how do you assess that?
Well, most auction records are where most appraisers get their information from. So if modern or contemporary artist hasn't been at auction, there's really no, unless you just have kind of a gut feeling as to what you have to charge for it. You know, we have to set price on art that we sell for our artists every day. So doing it enough, you get a sense of what some value is.
Now, would you consider your gallery primarily contemporary?
I think we enjoy contemporary work, and I think one thing about our gallery is that we love to work with artists that are still working.
Good.
So we're not a dead artist gallery, even though we will sell a piece or two that might be from a collection or older piece, but primarily we love the idea that we get to know the artists. You introduced us to a few artists a number of years ago maintained great relationships with, and have enjoyed those relationships. And I think I can easily authenticate the fact that this is actually a Chuck Olson or a Paul Chanowski or an artist that we work with every day. So I'm the source on that.
So are you a star maker in modern art? Have you discovered anybody who's really just taken off after their time at James Gallery?
I don't know that I'm in that position. I know that we try to do the best we can for the artists that are here. And I think, I hate to even admit this, but I think New York still is the place where that happens. And we would, obviously, we'd love to see our artists have that kind of success. We work with the professional artists, though. So the artists that we work with actually make their living that way.
Now, see, that's interesting to hear, because a large part of your attraction to working with an artist is their work ethic. What is it about their actual work that you know might attract you to an artist?
Wow, I think I can say that's probably more intuitive than something that I get out of it when I look at it. It just tells me that I like it or I don't.
Mm-hmm.
The piece that I look at longer, I think I tend to feel that I will like it longer too. So it. I tend to like things that I don't think are trendy, for instance. Mm-hmm. I tend to like things that I think will have longevity and that are, you know, can stand on their own and not fall out of grace because they're too common.
Sure. And on that note, you mentioned Paul Chanowski, and this is a man who creates artwork by essentially burning a canvas.
Actually, it's paper.
It's paper.
It's even worse. I mean, he burns paper. And so he works on a 300-pound Arches paper, paints with water first, and the water becomes the resist to the flame. It's not a little flame. It's a big flame.
And that the product is beautiful.
It's almost photographic.
Yes, yes.
We originally called them pyrographics.
Huh. Is that a term that you've coined?
Actually, he did, and he changed it. He calls them fire drawings.
Hmm.
And his work has evolved. I mean, if you think you could control a flame enough to paint a nude or to draw a forest, or his most common pieces or most recognizable are city scenes or urban mm-hmm. scenes with, you know, headlights coming toward you, and you can make out the city. And he's done a number of Pittsburgh that are fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a real talent. These images appear like that.
Now, as somebody who, because he was doing cityscapes prior to coming to Pittsburgh, so as somebody who was in the mode of interpreting cityscapes in their artwork, what were his thoughts on Pittsburgh?
Photogenic. I mean, I think right away he found that Pittsburgh was a great subject. Icons that were like the fountain, and aren't we so lucky to have it back?
Mm-hmm.
That tells you that you're on the point of Pittsburgh when you see it. So his work, the PPG building, just the architecture and the way, even as lit at night, tells you right away that you're in the Bridges.
Yep.
The ballparks. There's so many icons now that can identify our city. Our city's really come a long way in the last 20 years.
Yeah, in the last 10, 5 yeah, yeah. even. You know, what's great too, and is a great thing for a show like Berg Vivant, is that now all these reports are coming out, most livable city, you know, one of the top travel destinations. I mean, this is fantastic.
It's about the most intelligent city.
I heard that too. You know, did we have something to do with this, or is this just kind of grown up around us? I don't know. Could we take any credit for this at all? Because that was going to be my next topic. You know, you've traveled a lot. And you've done, you know, art installation projects in other cities. And of all the places that you can go and all the places that you can be, you're here. So what are your thoughts on Pittsburgh as far as a cultural destination, or more specifically for fine art?
Well, we exist here. And Pittsburgh really, you know, is the center in the arts for the most part. It's the museums, the ballet, the opera, mm-hmm. the symphony, and I think, if I'm honest, I think the gallery situation in Pittsburgh has, I don't say been overlooked, but it's difficult. We're a smaller town where I think a lot of the major collectors might leave our town to collect. You're finding more and more people are looking to the talent that's here. There's a vast amount of talent that's in Pittsburgh, and we find that we send a lot of work to New York to wow. be seen at other galleries because they're looking for the kind of talent that we have here. And that talent is across the board in the arts. You have great jazz players here. And in the fine arts, I know for a fact that, I mean, we would love to say that our commercial gallery scene in Pittsburgh is really thriving, but it struggles. And we have just found a way to do business that, like you said, we have the longevity.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, a couple different facets. You've got the frame foundry here, which is your framing operation.
Right.
You've got the, you know, the design projects as well as the commercial gallery here. And you brought up, you know, jazz, and I think that's even something that you've incorporated here. You've had music evenings here in the gallery.
Yeah, we're sitting next to a Steinway.
We are. Great. If you can't see that, ladies and gentlemen, there's a beautiful Steinway right here that has entertained many over the years.
Yeah,
and a fantastic courtyard. Would that be the...
Yeah, it's our urban garden.
Urban garden, which is available to rent for weddings, parties, get-togethers,
exactly.
Wine and caviar evenings.
Well, this is, I think when we saw the space and when we visioned what we could do with it, I don't think originally we thought this would become a venue for rental. It mm-hmm. wasn't on our mind. Didn't take too long for us to know that that was a good possibility. And I think with the space that we have, I think we can produce a show in a small, kind of intimate way.
Oh, yeah.
We were fortunate enough to have an artist of the caliber of James Moody here before he died. We partnered with Manchester Craftsman's Guild, and we bring jazz in quite often just for the entertainment of our friends and clients.
Great. It's the full package here at James Gallery. So where do you see the business in 5 years, 10 years?
Well, I think we try to improve what we do. I think we'll focus on things we enjoy to do. We love the relationships that we have with our friends and the artists that we work with. I think we look to make our lives a little easier when it comes to that. I mean, it's really rewarding when we can help somebody when in the art business. I don't know. I've been threatening that we would live upstairs for the last 10 years, and that hasn't happened, so maybe that's something I see happening.
Why is that a threat? That'd be fantastic to live here.
It hasn't happened. We focus so much on the work that we do on the first floor that we have about 3,500 feet that still is more like a storage area than a loft. Mm-hmm. And I think we'd like the opportunity maybe someday to see that happen. But
sure. Now, just roll with me on this one. If I became mayor of Pittsburgh and I walked in your door and
you heard it first here.
That's right. I walked in your door and I said, all right, listen, I got a big job for you. It's downtown. I want you to make it fabulous. Murals, sculptures, carte blanche. How would you remake downtown Pittsburgh?
Well, first, preserve what's great from the past. I think that would be right up mm-hmm. on top. I think one thing when I do travel, I notice public art is that much more prevalent. And I think that would be, I really think that we could do more in Pittsburgh to mm-hmm. present great art in public venue. I like the direction the city's taking in that regard, though. I think there's a really strong...
There are a lot of organizations that support that.
I think that with the people that are involved, I think that they're looking to do the right things. We've been a city that has taken its time to change. Mm-hmm. We don't do anything really fast. But I think when we do it, we seem to do a good job of it.
Yeah. So now remember, a carte blanche here. I'm giving it, you can do this in a week, you can do this in a month, money is no object. So you could make this happen fast in the Brian is mayor of Pittsburgh scenario, okay? So sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit. Oh, can you imagine? Well, I think you'd have to put out to the art community that you have carte blanche and be as creative with ideas as you possibly can. I couldn't imagine what would come back.
I can't either.
Yeah, creative.
But
people.
My campaign committee is hard at work on it, so we'll get back
I'll
to you on that.
First in line.
Good. Yeah. Great. Hey, the first vote right here. Every vote counts. Thank you very much. So when you're not, here in the gallery, when you're not working on designing the art motif for a new stadium, what do you like to do in Pittsburgh?
Oh, there's so much to do. We're out every night. We eat out a lot. So the restaurants in town have improved 1,000%. We're so excited about all the new restaurants that that we enjoy. So we enjoy the outdoors. We've been seeing a lot of the bike trails in town. That whole situation's improved a lot. We go to see what our competitors are doing. We go to see art in the museums. We enjoy that. And I'd love to hear the good music, so I keep my eye on what's happening in town in that regard, and we try to at least get out one night a week to hear some good music.
Catch any good concerts lately? Any good tunes?
Yeah, funny. I saw Steve Martin last week.
And get out!
A fantastic concert.
Steve Martin. But this wasn't comedy. This was his music, right?
It was jazz. I
heard about
that. He was playing the banjo, no arrow through his head.
Was he funny?
It was hysterical. I think the best part of the ability for him to be the front man for a band is the fact that he's so light on his feet and he's so hysterical. And he captures your attention and... I had a great time. He was very entertaining.
Are you yourself a musician?
I am.
What do you play?
Well, I studied voice at CMU many years
ago. Oh, yeah?
So, Yeah, I did.
I didn't know this about you.
Yeah, how about that?
So do you ever serenade your patrons here? Or?
On occasion. Have you been here for that?
I haven't.
Yeah, on occasion I do. But
so how many more of these until I get you to sing a few notes here for us?
A lot.
Yeah. Well, we got time.
I have some criteria. I usually like to play with great players. Mm-hmm. So I'm fortunate enough when we bring in some of the city best players, I get invited to play with them. I don't overstay my welcome. Yeah, you know, sing a few tunes.
Leave them wanting more.
Exactly.
And never appear on stage with children or animals. They'll always upstage you. You heard it from me, kid. Good luck. You'll make it out there.
There you go. I'm listening.
Do you have standards that you usually do, like your old go-tos?
I tend to enjoy old rock tune twisted to a jazz flavor. So. And they're common these days. So
when you go out to one of these restaurants and they may or may not have karaoke there, do you kind of like...
Never.
You don't feel the urge?
No.
Well, why? Because you can do it here when you've got these great musicians coming
in. I love
the
interaction with the players.
Good.
You know, similar to the artists. You know, I like to work with artists that are, you know, here and now. They're producing. I love to work with musicians, and karaoke just never had an interest in it. So, sorry.
That's all right. But you know, it's interesting about this. You know, I think a lot of times the galleries really reflect the owner, the director. And that's kind of what, you know, this gallery, you know, covers all facets of it. And, you know, you saying that you know, what really attracts you to working with an artist, whether they be visual, musical, is their personality, their work ethic. You know, I think this gallery really reflects you as a person. That's kind of neat. I mean, do you feel that?
No, I think there's lots of personalities here myself.
You're like, no, I don't. This isn't me at all.
Hey. Sorry, no way.
I was kind of going for that.
I think there are a lot of strong personalities in the gallery.
This one in particular.
And I think a lot of there's a little bit of everybody that's apparent when you come to the gallery.
Well, that's good too.
Yeah, I think so.
Very good. Very good. Quirky or little known facts about you. Nickname, Frames, started at age 14. Your nickname was Frames.
Well, that came later, but yeah, I'm called by my better half as Frames, so.
James Frames.
How about that?
And now, was that the title of your first business,
actually? Yes, actually.
So you had been framing, I think you said, since you were 14, right?
Yeah. Nonstop. Since I was 14. That's a long time.
That is.
But to do anything.
It's about putting things in perspective.
Well, I hardly touch it anymore, but I really enjoyed it. It's a nice profession.
Now, is it true that you tried out for the Pirates at age 15?
That is true.
What is the story behind that?
Well, I could play ball. I went to Forbes Field. I got a letter from the Pirates asking me to show up on a Saturday at Forbes Field. My dad dropped me off at the ballpark. If you can imagine walking through in the most beautiful place you'd ever seen. The only thing I had interest in was getting into right field to be in the spot that my hero was playing, Roberto Clemente. And 15, I was a pretty young prospect, but...
Wow.
Yeah.
So history could have changed completely if you had been accepted
onto
the
Pirates. If I hadn't
found
that I enjoyed playing music, that might have happened.
But you are a Renaissance man, sir.
Well, those two things didn't mix in the 60s, let me tell you.
Well, but now it's fantastic, you know? And incidentally, the Pirates are having a great year.
Aren't they? Isn't that great?
Without you.
You know.
Did you go to the games?
As many as I can.
Yeah.
I love to watch. Never thought I would. I loved to play when I was younger, but it's a real interesting game. I love to watch it.
And you belt out that national anthem with your background there.
I've only done that once, but not at the ballpark, so.
Good, good, good. Wow, very nice. From Mount Lebanon, from the area.
Yeah, grew up in Mount Lebanon. Yeah. I don't see living anywhere else. I love to be in Pittsburgh.
That's what we like to hear.
Yeah, it's great. When I'm away, I like to come back. I mean, I think this is a really great place. I think a lot of people are finding out about it. So
it's a good place to be, and I think you've done a lot of great things for this city. I think it's glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me tonight.
So definitely stop by James Gallery in the West End. They need an appointment?
No.
Yeah, stop in.
9 to 5.
9 to 5.
Through Saturday.
Very good. Very good. Mr. Frederick, it was a pleasure having you here today. We'll see you again, I hope. In closing, we just want to thank once again our sponsors and strategic partners, Cephalos, Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie PA, Accelerando Music Conservatory, Cannonsburg, Arcade Comedy Theater, Creating the Laughs Downtown, and the Berg Vivant Charitable Beneficiary, Firefly Arts, fireflyarts.org. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and at bergvivant.com. Thank you, Pittsburgh, and good night. That's a wrap.